Hello and thank you for listening to the Radio Radar Plus podcast. This is episode 18 for Friday, September 4th. I'm your host, Ludwig Kitzmann. I'm the U.S. Editor-in-Chief over at Games Radar, which started life as a fake website that was briefly depicted in a movie about hackers, but then it just became its own thing. I'm also joined by editor Ashley Reed.
So unrealistic, those hacker movies.
And, of course, managing editor Susan Arndt.
Hackers, I maintain, is still one of the greatest comedies of all time.
What is the best? Is there a good hacker movie? Because I feel like it's so difficult to depict hacking in a way that's sexy on screen.
Unless you cast Chris Hemsworth.
I mean, I kind of like how bad Swordfish is.
Swordfish is terrible.
Because the hacking is awful, but it has that cool explosion at the beginning, and then they fly a bus through the skyscrapers and stuff. And John Travolta has weird hair.
Oh, his hair is terrible in that movie. I will tell you what, the best representation of computers, it's not hacking, but the best representation of computers I've ever seen in a movie is Unfriended.
Okay.
Ooh.
Okay. That movie seemed uncomfortably contemporary to me.
It is. If you are a person who likes horror movies, and B, if you are a person who is online a lot, who's on Facebook and IM and Skype regularly, mm-hmm. You will really enjoy that movie because it is completely accurate in how it represents the way people actually use their computers.
Okay.
I'll have to check that out. I did see on Rotten Tomatoes it was certified fresh. So I was like, that's unexpected.
I mean, the trailers just seemed... I know
it looks and
it
was like
I had the get off
stupid.
My lawn feeling in my stomach. Right? I think that's the problem.
And I'm pretty sure that's also it's made by MTV Movies, and they also made, like, My Killer Sweet 16.
Yeah.
Oh, they have a great track record.
Yeah, no, but you are completely fair, completely reasonable to think it's going to be total crap, but it's very, very good. If you are not a person who is online a lot, I don't think you'll enjoy the storytelling.
Mm. So how's your cave working out for you?
You have a very nice rock.
So, video games. Yeah, that's what the show is about. Video games. We went to PAX. Susan and I, we had a bunch of panels. We met a lot of cool readers, and we played some games. It was a really good show. It was the first time that I'd gone to the one in Seattle. I've gone to all of the other PAXes, save for the one in Australia. And it was a lot of fun. Susan, you had a cool panel about terrible games.
I did. I had a panel called My Favorite Terrible Game. Because everybody has a game that they know this game is terrible. They know it's not good. It is objectively bad. And yet it has a place in their heart anyway. Mine was X-Men Destiny.
Oh, very nice.
Silicon Knights.
Yep. Silicon Knights joint. It is a horrendous game. It fails on every level. It is ugly. It is boring. It is almost offensively stupid. But here's why I love it. Because it is very, very clear that the team who made it got something taken away from them. Either time or money or people. Because the core idea of the game, which is that you are a new mutant who has just come into your powers. And you find, over the course of the game, different X-Men genes that you can mix and match together so you could, you know, maybe have, you know, the defensive capability of Emma Frost, but the offensive capability of Wolverine. That's really neat. That's a really, really neat idea.
When I first heard about that game, it was described to me as Mass Effect, but with mutants.
It's very much not
like, yeah,
that
sounds great. Do it. It'll be great.
It is definitely not that. It is a game that has a deep combat system that you will completely ignore because all you have to do is hit one button the entire time. it's terrible. But it's complete. It works. You know, it's not buggy. It is not well done, but they made sure that they pushed something out the door that is a fully functional game. And mm-hmm. I respect that. So, I mean, I think I can say with a fair amount of certainty that the folks who made that game didn't want to make the game that they ended up getting stuck with. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Something happened. I don't know what happened, but something happened along the way. So they at least did what they could to make sure it worked. And I respect that. And that is why it holds a place in my heart. Our own Dave Roberts went with the Dynasty Warriors franchise. He said, he's like, well, it's kind of cheating to pick a whole franchise.
Because it's like 1,000 games.
Yeah, but they're all basically the same thing. So it counts. Mm-hmm. And Nier was one of the choices. And what did Michi pick? Michi D. Earth Defense Force.
Oh, good one. He went with Earth good Defense work. Force.
So I'm wondering what your favorite terrible games would be.
Oh, that is a good question. Ashley, you go first.
Oh, is that how it's going
to
be?
Just passing it over to you.
I think I know. It's probably Rule of Rose.
Rule of Rose is kind of terrible.
Yeah, the old PS2, for anyone who doesn't know, it's a really old, really obscure PS2 game about this girl who somehow ends up in a boarding school, which is actually a blimp, and all of the kids are like these psychopaths, and they torture her horribly, and they torture each other, and it's... The game itself doesn't play very well. Like, there's almost no impact detection, and the fights are really awkward. So the actual part you're playing the game is kind of crappy. It's like, why am I bothering with this? And you're supposed there. It's this huge school, and you're supposed to go searching through it, but there's nothing to really find. It's just like some sweets or something, which I guess are worth extra health. But you won't need that health unless you go searching through. So it's like, there's no point. But the story is just so disturbing in how it depicts children abusing each other that it's just fascinating. Like, I have to keep watching. I have to know what happens. And also, it's told all out of order, so it's even more confusing. So I have to just keep watching, being like, what is happening here?
Well, for me, I think... I mean, anyone who knows me will probably understand that I'm just going to say it's the first Assassin's Creed. Right? I think it's brilliant in lots of ways, but I have many, many... It's been years now. When did this game come out? 2007?
Yeah.
I've yet to convince anyone that it's great in the same way that I think it is, which I think means that I can fairly say it's not a great game, but I still love it.
I agree with you, because we just did our ranked Assassin's Creed list of all the Assassin's Creed's best to worst, and I fought to get one kind of further up there, but it got knocked down quite a bit, because everyone's like, no, down the list. I'm like, come on, guys. So I feel you.
This sounds like a perfect time to roll into how wrong is your list.
Ooh,
right?
Because hey, there we go.
We're talking about some bad games, but we also requested people to let us know... about some of their favorite licensed games. Now, before we get to our own wrong lists, which will probably be much worse than the ones that are sent in by our lovely listeners, and if you want to participate, email us at radioradar@gamesradar.com. That's two radars in there. The first one I got is from Shay. She said, I don't have a list, but I do have something to submit that is fairly wrong, and that is McDonald's Treasureland Adventure.
Ooh.
It was something I enjoyed a lot as a kid, and I thought it was a pretty solid platformer with enough of a challenge for its demographic and weird, very Japanese visuals. A good example being a boss who is a pirate captain with a huge pair of lips as a head. The thing to note of this game is that it was developed by Treasure, the studio behind Gunstar Heroes. They also went on to do stuff like Ikaruga. Sin and Punishment is a really good game.
Yeah, that is a good game.
That they do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think people hate that game precisely because it is a Treasure game. And it's like, Treasure, why did you do this? Why did you make a game where you play as Ronald McDonald?
Why did this happen? How could this happen?
Because someone wrote a check.
Right.
That's exactly
fair enough.
That just happened to be the plot of the game as well.
Yeah.
We also have one from Steven. His list is pretty good, actually, by which I mean terrible. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in Time.
That's pretty good.
For SNES. It's obviously a beloved franchise, but Turtles in Time was the only game that I feel ever really expressed how absurd the franchise was. I know the original source material was super dark, but it feels to me like this video game was the definitive expression of the brand, super silly and over the top. He also has Chip and Dale's Rescue Rangers.
Good choice.
Yes.
Yeah, that's it. I mean... Mm-hmm. I remember spending way too much time trying to defeat Fat Cat at the end as he dropped cigarette ash on you. What a jerk.
DuckTales.
And number one, this one is pretty hard to contest, Shadow of Mordor.
Ooh, oh, yes. Yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
That was one of those games that came out, so that was 2013, 2014.
Mm-hmm.
that sort of came out in roughly like within 6 months of Alien Isolation.
Mm-hmm. I think it was a little before.
It was like even shorter than that.
I think it was 2 months before.
Right, and that was when it sort of hit us that these big budget in like licensed games are pretty awesome now.
Mm-hmm.
Like the license allows them to actually invest a lot of money. Like it mitigates the risk to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just did a really good job of designing both of those games in ways that I think don't even make them appealing just for the fact that they're part of those licenses, right? I think anyone can enjoy Alien or Shadow of Mordor.
I think movie studios are starting to figure out, it's like, well, we could just do these really crappy, like, comes out a week after the movie, junky licensed games that almost no one will buy, or we can do a higher quality production that more people will buy.
Right.
Nah.
We hear the logic. It makes sense. And that one was from Stefan, who you can also follow at EF Gaming on Twitter.
Awesome.
And finally, I have one from Bill. And he says he's really been enjoying the new podcast. I have to admit, I was skeptical when GR added the plus and when I heard that the podcast was changing, but it turned out fantastic. Thank you, Bill. Thank you very much.
Hooray.
Now the pleasantries are out of the way. Let's get to the nitty gritty. It's the how wrong is your list? And he starts with Transformers.
Oh.
This is a PS2 game published by Atari in 2014. It was based on the Armada television series, and it was actually really great. It lets you choose one of three Transformers. They all play quite differently from each other. And it just had a really cool animation and the combat in it. That's a good one. I actually think that the, what was it, High Moon Studios?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
They did the War for Cybertron and Fall for Cybertron games.
Yeah, those are actually legit.
Those are pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really fun shooters. With really fun, like, flying segments. And they really took advantage of the fact that you can transform. This is one that I also like. X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Oh, God.
Far better than the movie.
Oh, good.
Which is not difficult, but again.
I am literally the only person I know who likes that movie.
Are you?
Well, I don't take it as canon, is the thing.
Ah, yeah. That probably
I
helps.
I take it as canon in the sense that it should be shot out of a canon.
Oh.
You know, so.
But, I mean, I feel let down by a fellow South African who directed that movie. He was supposed to be great. Remember, he directed Tsotsi, and everyone loved it. And then he did X-Men Origins.
And you're like, how could you do this?
You have betrayed us. but yeah, that's a pretty good game. I think it was developed by Raven. For once we get a video game character where it is explained why they have regenerative health.
Ooh, right? Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Because usually it's just like, oh, Nathan Drake, he's Wolverine, right. Basically.
That's a good point. Hadn't thought of that. That's how it gets in, it worms into your brain, you stop questioning it.
Right, and it's really cool, like, fun lock-on ability where you could, like, lock on to people and just launch yourself into them, like, with your claws extended. It was really fun.
Oh, so kind of like Cassandra from Dragon Age.
Yeah, pretty much. The Chronicles of Riddick, Escape from Butcher Bay.
Yeah.
Ooh, there you go. It's on our...
See, this is where, like, I'm the inverse of Susan is when it comes to X-Men Origins Wolverine. It's like, I'm the only person on the planet that does not like Escape from Butcher Bay. I just don't like it.
I have not played Escape from Butcher Bay. I cannot speak to that one. It's but really good. It is on our best stealth games list. It was highly recommended.
It's
so.
Really good.
Just never cared for it.
No, he's
I was more of a fan of The Darkness, to be honest.
Ugh. Oh, God. That maybe that should be like a favorite terrible game. It's like it's the game where
Darkness isn't terrible.
It's not terrible, but its reach surpasses its grasp.
Yeah, that's I kind of feel like it falls into that same one of our writers, Sam Prell, just wrote an article about how games get maturity wrong. They kind of just they attach the visual parts of maturity, but don't go much deeper than that. I feel like The Darkness pushes into that territory far too often. They're like, look, you just ripped a guy's skull out through his ass. Isn't that dark and gritty? I'm like, not really.
It's fun. Like the
right.
Little snake arms
right.
Rip someone's heart out and eat them. Never, it should get old. Never gets old. Never, never.
Yeah. That's like when it's like so tacky, it sort of swings back around to enjoyable.
It's true.
It's awesome. Yeah, and right. it's basically a light bulb shooting simulator.
Mm-hmm. Because you had some of the lights, otherwise your darkness powers were weakened.
It's...
go for it, Susan.
It's just not as... There's a lot of really good ideas in The Darkness. There
yes.
absolutely are. They just don't all quite come together.
But I have to say, Starbreeze, they make really interesting first-person shooters. They don't always work.
I agree, yes.
But they make, they're different. They're very different. Like, so like The Darkness, and they did Syndicate, which I know people really disliked for not being like a...
For not being Syndicate.
Right, yeah. Exactly, mm-hmm. Which is fair. Like, why use that brand if you're not going to be somewhat faithful to it? But that was also a pretty interesting shooter, I thought.
Now the question is, The Darkness or The Darkness 2?
I think everyone agrees The Darkness 2 is better.
Oh, right? For sure.
And I think people even like the story in that one.
The ending, I won't say what it is, because there's no real reason to go spoil that, but damn! Like, why would you do that?
Ashley Reed's review of a video game ending. Damn! Lego Star Wars The Complete Saga is another one that Mike suggests. Bull. That's a good one, too. I think that's a really good one to play with someone who does not play a lot of games.
Oh, for sure.
It's fun.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, the idea of, like, Traveler's Tales, their concept of a puzzle is a little dubious, I would say. Mm-hmm. But they're always, like, colorful and funny and beautiful. Like, the graphics are surprisingly good.
Oh, they're wonderful. And actually, I have a Lego game on my list. But you have to be... Okay. There's an A team and there's a B team over there at Traveler's Tales. And you can very much tell who's making which game.
Well, they do like a million of these every year.
Yeah, and some of them are really, really great, and some are not.
Yeah, that's true.
Is it a DC and Marvel thing?
It's like Lego Indiana Jones. I feel like
the Lego Batman ones are the good ones, right?
Lego Indiana Jones isn't just bad, it's buggy and bad. Mm. But then you get Lego Star Wars, which is brilliant. I mean, it's just outstanding.
Final one on this list, and this is, I'm going to give this, this is... a brilliant use. This is a brilliant attempt at the challenge of coming up with the wrong list for licensed games. Metro Redux.
Is that licensed?
Well, it's a comic book.
It is
book,
based
so.
On a Russian novel.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, the Metro series. I mean, I think they've definitely translated the first one, Metro 2033, into English. I think the author is Dmitry Glukhovsky. You can look it up on Amazon. It's that game is very... It feels very novelistic to me, mm-hmm. which is what I think is really cool. And that's why I think it's a really good choice. Wrong, but good.
Totally wrong.
And Redux is, of course, it was a really good update to Metro 2033 and Lost Light, and a really good value for money. So let's roll over to yours, Susan.
Oh, okay.
So I know you have a Lego game in there somewhere.
Yes, that would be Lego Pirates of the Caribbean.
Ooh, cute.
I had forgotten that was one of them.
It's so good. It's so funny, and it captures all, you know, because the thing about the Pirates of the Caribbean movies is that there's just this, you know, subtext of just funniness, just silly, just very, very kid-friendly goofiness, mm-hmm. as is appropriate for something that Disney put out. And the Lego Pirates of the Caribbean captures that perfectly. Its little Lego Jack Sparrow is just the most wonderfully animated thing ever as he just, you know, drunkenly reels around the stages. It's just absolutely wonderful. It's probably my favorite of the Lego games, even more so than the Lego Harry Potter games, because the Lego Harry Potter, you can levitate the blocks and the physics don't work that well, so it's kind of frustrating. But everything in Lego Pirates just works, and it's just very, very funny.
Man, we should do a history of the Harry Potter games, because I feel like there are very weird things happening as they go through the movies.
Yes!
Oh,
because
man,
there was the bizarre, terrible Kinect game that nobody liked.
Oh, my God.
There was a time where they thought they were Gears of War when they did, like, Deathly Hallows or something.
Yeah, there was a shooter.
Yeah.
It was a Harry Potter shooter.
Gross.
Right?
I still remember playing, like, way back in the day when the movies had first started coming out. I remember playing Chamber of Secrets on PC, and my computer was so slow that it was literally, like, a frame per second, me trying to play this game. I didn't realize at the time that games ran faster than that.
Oh,
I
wow.
thought that was normal. I was like, okay, this is how you play the game, I guess. And now I play games, and I think about that, and I just kind of cringe a little bit. I'm like, oh, God.
Now you get 60 frames per second for your money.
And if I get any less, I throw a fit.
Right. That was 59. That was clearly 59. You dropped a frame, video game. Please, Susan, carry on with your list of wrongness.
Tiny Toons Buster Bus Loose.
Ooh, I've heard. Yes, yes, I know this one. Yes. I know this one. You're making a face.
I mean, I love the show.
It's it was a Super Nintendo game, and it's a side-scrolling platformer. Shockingly difficult, given that it was based on a cartoon, but really good. Like, solid platforming, great use of all the characters, really, really good looking, completely captured the look of the show, had the music. Really fun game. It was one of my favorites for my Super Nintendo. Hmm.
It's pretty cute. Nice. It's very cute. Yeah.
Tiny and Toony.
It was both Tiny and Toony.
We're Tiny, we're Toony, we're all...
I will sing the entire theme song, Don't Challenge Me. After that, I have a trifecta of Super Star Wars, Super Empire, and Super Return of the Jedi.
I do not know about these.
Again,
now
all
I'm
for
lost.
The Super Nintendo. Again, side-scrolling platformers. Ridiculously hard.
Like, yeah, okay.
Stupidly hard.
Is this the one where you have to, like, when you're playing as Luke, you have to hide to attack a snow monster or it will kill the crap out of you?
Oh, everything will kill the crap out of
you. So the ski-free monster is a Wampa?
What? Yeah. Yes.
Right. Yeah. What? Yeah, that.
But
people who had Windows.
All I remember from playing Super Star Wars, because I had to do this level so many times, was you have to jump across the many different platforms on a Jawa sand crawler while cannons are shooting at you, and you have to, you know, break them all with your lightsaber, which honestly you shouldn't even be able to use yet. But whatever.
I'm sorry. But a Jawa sandcrawler, that is clearly not meant for jumping.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's
that's like doing skateboarding tricks with a tank.
It's made for... It's the entire game is made of lies. Completely. It's just... completely. It's so not in any way accurate to the action of the movies. But whatever. But...
You know what I would love is like if someone went and reverse filmed Star Wars based on the game.
Oh my God.
Right?
It would be... Yeah. There would be many more explosions. But... It was, and you have to remember that this was before the long before the prequels came out, and the music and the sound effects were all right from the movies. Mm-hmm. So at that time, this was just a remarkable experience. It really felt genuinely Star Wars, even though you were doing stuff that would never happen in Star Wars. And they were just really, really solid platformers, super challenging. Number two, cool spot, the 7-Up game.
Oh
yeah.
I
like that one.
I remember
it,
that
one.
It
had some funny movie parodies in it.
No, that's the second one.
Oh, is that Ghost of Hollywood?
Yeah, that spot goes to Hollywood. The first one is a more...
Why didn't you pick that one? That one's better.
It's really good. It is a solid platformer, and it just happens to star a soda mascot, which is the cool spot, which is the little red dot in the 7-Up logo.
Back in the day when everything was personified.
He has since been retired, right?
Huh?
He has since been retired?
He has since been retired. Actually, I think he was only a thing for the games.
Oh, where do mascots go when they get retired, I wonder?
To a field in New York. Upstate.
Yeah, they live on a farm and they run around and they have But it was very cute. It had really great music. The levels were very creative, and it didn't feel like it was trying to sell you 7-Up the whole time.
Right.
Like, I think you could collect bottles for, you know, to be your 1-Ups or whatever, but it was very incidental to the gameplay. And so I really enjoyed it. That was a Genesis game. I dug it. It was a lot of fun. Very, very cute. Number one.
Here we go.
The Witcher 3.
There we go.
Okay.
That's a jump in quality.
No, I mean, it makes sense. It is based on
the novels.
Novel
based
series.
On the Witcher novels.
Yeah. Polish folklore as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically Poland the game.
And it's one of the best games ever made, period. The end.
I have to get started on that one. I've played The Witcher 2. I enjoyed that, but I haven't got to Witcher 3 yet. I'm going to have to do it.
I don't remember the author's name, so if you'll just have to look it up on Amazon. But I do recommend the book that's called The Lost Wish. It is genuinely well-written. It's fun. It's funny. It's a great Witcher book. If you like the world of The Witcher, you have to check it out.
Though I have heard that Geralt in the books is a lot more monogamous than Geralt in the games.
Yes.
So this is something I got asked a lot at PAX. especially because I did a panel about the best female characters in games of the past year, and I talked a lot about Ciri and Yennefer from The Witcher 3. And I had a bunch of women come up to me afterwards and say, you know what, I've heard a lot of women really advocating for The Witcher 3, and the overt sexuality of the previous games turned me off. Ladies, I would like to speak to the ladies in the audience now. I totally get that, because collecting sex cards, kind of gross. The Witcher 3 has such a wonderful attitude towards sexuality, and not just female sexuality, but just sexuality, period, the end, as being a thing that adults do because they like it.
Oh, that's
scandalous.
Good. Hey, that sounds
scandalous
nice.
Scandalous information being shared on this podcast.
I know.
I cannot believe that you would drag our wonderful, elegant, beautiful show
down
through
into
the
muck.
Smut pools.
Smut.
There's one thing, and I'll describe it very vaguely, Susan, because I'm not sure if this is a spoiler or not. I stumbled on it on YouTube.
Sex on the Unicorn?
No. Okay. No.
Because that happened.
There's a scene. Where, and I thought from the description of the video that it was like a parody video that someone had put together, mm-hmm. but I clicked on it and it's a scene where Geralt wakes up mm-hmm. and Yennefer and Triss are both in the room with him and they're like, hey, you know, we've been fighting a lot between each other about things, but we think we figured something out, so come by this place later tonight and we'll both be there. And there's some implications to this scene. And I was like, whoa, what is going on? And I immediately stopped it because I was like, I'm not sure if I'm about to spoil myself or something. But is that something that actually happens? Or was that a very cleverly made parody video?
I have not run into that. I don't know how far into the game I am. But what I enjoy about the way that is all handled is for both Trish. Okay, so both Trish and Yennefer are Geralt's exes.
Oh, okay.
Yennefer is the more recent ex.
Mm-hmm.
And so they both, they both dig Geralt because he.
How could you not?
Is he
not
diggable? Is he in fact diggable?
He is diggable. The game starts with him naked, and you get it. You understand
yes.
immediately why he is a popular fella.
Too old
for
me.
But I mean, it's what, like, when Geralt is around, they enjoy having him as part of their lives. And when he's mm-hmm. not, that's okay, because they're fully realized people with their own stuff to do, right? Like, he is not the center of their universe, and they feel empty when he is gone. It's like, hey, if you're around, we should spend time together because I really enjoy
right.
you. And if he's not, cool. They, you know, they're people. And they're going to do things. And it's just this really, it's a wonderfully mature attitude towards, you know, interpersonal relationships and sex that you just don't see a whole lot.
Okay. I think you just sold it, Susan. You sold it real good.
Also, Geralt right. is hot. He's hot.
Yes.
He's hot.
Yeah. I've seen the screenshots. I'm like, oh my God. Okay.
There was a cosplayer for Ciri at PAX, and she was perfect. I mean, she looked amazing. And Ciri is a very attractive character. And I was like, this is great. Where did Geralt cosplay at? Where's that guy?
Why did you not bring a Geralt cosplayer with you?
Seriously.
There's a really good Borderlands guy walking around.
There's always good Borderlands, folks. Good Borderlands, good Dragon Age, good Mass Effect. These are guarantees.
We clearly just need more shirtless male characters.
Yes.
For people to cosplay as.
Yes.
Let's do that.
Sexy Layton wasn't there
happen.
This time, sadly.
Oh, Sexy Layton, not there. That's disappointing. Yeah, why'd you have to remind me of that? There's also Sexy Master Chief, I don't know if you've seen him.
Yes.
Yes,
good.
I have seen Sexy Master Chief, yes.
Anyway, my list is, I would say it's a few degrees less wrong than yours.
Okay.
But it's not out of the realm
okay.
of incorrectness. I'm going to start with 007 Bloodstone.
Good choice.
Which is a great James Bond
it
game.
Really
it really is. It's the Daniel Craig era Bond, so this is after Casino Royale.
Okay.
And I think it's also, I think it was after Quantum of Solace.
Believe so, yes.
And it was developed by Bizarre Creations, who you may know as the former developer. They're shut down now, unfortunately, but they did the Project Gotham racing series.
Which is awesome.
Yep. Before that, they did Metropolis Street Racer. And they did a game called, what was the arcade-driven scoring shooter. It's called The Club, I think. The Club. Yeah, that's the one they did. They're a pretty good developer. They also did Blur, which is a great racing game.
Oh, okay.
Which had a very short lifespan, unfortunately. But anyway, it was really good.
It was very good.
Yeah, it's like a cool Mario Kart with real cars. Bloodstained was cool because it is basically Uncharted.
Mm-hmm.
They lifted the model of Uncharted with some like a combination of gunplay and stealth, and they added some racing segments because Bond obviously likes driving new cars, and the racing segments were kind of split second. They were built around set pieces and sort of spectacular things would happen while you drove, and like you would have to drive in the right way, and like so that means you died a couple of times here and there, but it kind of made it feel like a real car chase because it was very scripted and cinematic, and it had a great soundtrack. It was just really good. It had an original song by Joss Stone.
Okay.
It's a legit game, and it got
It's great.
Overlooked.
It's a proper Bond game.
Yeah, I think it got overlooked because people expected it to just be a cheap cash in type game, but it's fully legit.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. That's awesome. Because definitely, I have not taken a Bond game seriously probably since GoldenEye, which is awful of me, I know, but I haven't been giving them a chance.
It's not unfair. I mean, they haven't really been that many great Bond games since then. Alien Isolation, I had to put that
of
in
course.
Here. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so good. It's a great horror game. It exceeds well beyond its license. I think anyone can dig it if they like horror games. And at the same time, it was just an incredible recreation of something from a movie. And I think it was still an inspired choice to pick Creative Assembly, who are often attempting to recreate bits of history in their mm-hmm. strategy games, whereas this time they were just trying to create the emotion that you felt when you saw Alien for the first time, which is awesome.
It was very good. And one thing, you don't have to know much from the actual movies to understand what's going on in the game.
That's
the
true.
The one thing where I was like, oh, that was useful knowledge from the movies, was the fact that the alien cannot see. I actually forgot about that. And then there was one time where I was like pushed up against the wall and the alien looked at me and my instinct was to try to run, but I'm like, oh, I'm dead anyway. But it looked at me, but then I realized it couldn't see me and it walked out of the room. And I'm like, oh man, I've been running away in similar situations the entire game. Dang it, if I'd remembered.
And that's why the version of the alien in that game is really awesome. Batman Arkham Asylum, obviously.
Yep, good choice.
Oh,
good
choice. Yeah.
I'm not sure if that is still the best Arkham game, but I do think it was that one really redefined what licensed games could be.
Wait, is that the first one or the second one?
Arkham Asylum is the very first
one. Okay, it is the best one.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people prefer the environments. I really don't care for the story that much, though. I think the subsequent games did better storytelling.
I would agree with that.
But it is fun. It's the first one. Like it put everything back on track. It was basically the closest to a mature styled 3D version of Batman the Animated Series.
Right.
Which is cool.
That's a strong way to go because, and you definitely get a sense of Nolan's films out of the Arkham games, but there's always that worry you're going to end up with the third Nolan movie, and it's like, oh no,
right.
No!
Never mind, stop, let's back up. I also have Deadpool in here.
Oh, dang it!
Is coming up. It's about to be released on Xbox One and PS4 again. I don't really expect a huge remastering job on that, given how Prototype 1 and 2 were handled. Mm. But it came out on Xbox 360 and PS3 a couple of years back. And I imagine they're pushing it out now because Deadpool is getting his own movie finally. It's not the best action game. It's kind of like a very functional third-person action game.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it coasts on the fact that it is stupid. It's like, hey, isn't this game stupid? And you're like, yeah, but I mean, lots of games are completely earnest and serious, and they're stupid too. So I don't know that you can always get away with just being honest about it. Like, that's not necessarily, you know, like being stupid is not special mm-hmm. in video games. Not even if you are like upfront about it.
If you're trying.
But it was really, it had lots of funny moments, and Deadpool is extremely well suited to making fun of video game conventions.
True, very true.
There's like, one of my favorite things in the game is that there's a point where you're just in his apartment and you could just examine things and he can pick up a bookcase and it's like, it weighs nothing, like the entire thing. And he's just like, it's just this cheap 3D prop that's in my apartment. And he just lifts it up with one hand, an entire bookcase. filled with books. It's this really funny visual. And like, if you play a lot of games, you just know that a lot of materials in games just don't look like they have any weight. Like, it's just not, something about it is just not convincing.
I think there's one point where, like, he gets on the phone with his manager, and the manager's like, the game's under budget, this is great. And he's like, hold that thought. And it just starts doing all this crazy stuff. And it's like, no, you're eating up the budget.
They also make fun of, like, just leaving, like, when you have a button prompt that someone, a character is waiting for you to say something.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you can just leave them hanging forever. Like, they make fun of that, too, which is funny. I love doing that in David Cage games, by the way.
Oh, yes.
And finally, I have it's a Star Wars game. It is the third game, technically, in the Dark Forces series, which means it is the sequel to Jedi Knight. It is Jedi Knight 2, Jedi Outcast.
Yeah, that game's good.
Oh, that's...
it had really cool lightsaber combat. Yep. It had an excellent blend of first-person shooting and third-person combat. It had a good story. I love that game, and I played it so many times over and over. Just like for the lightsaber duels. They were just super cool. You got cool powers. Man, it was great.
For a second, I thought you were going to say Knights of the Old Republic, but you went way...
Knights of the Old Republic is awesome, too, but I feel like as an action game, like where you could just pick up stormtroopers and fling them away, this you want to go with Jedi Knight 2, Jedi Outcast.
Fair enough.
I mean, they tried to do the same kind of thing with Force Unleashed, but I mean...
Force Unleashed was not good.
Although it's so frustrating because the storyline in Force Unleashed is so good.
It is.
If that was Episode 1... the world would be a very different
place.
That's
true. A better place, really.
Though, there might, the new Star Wars movie might not be the same.
That's true.
Because I've heard tell that the people working on the new Star Wars movie are very much like, okay, we are going to do everything in our power to not remake the prequel trilogy.
But yeah, The Force Unleashed is also like really well written and well acted, and it's just, it looks like a movie for the most part. Just so disappointing that the gameplay didn't pan out. But whatever.
We're over it now.
It's been years. We can forgive it.
No, we can't.
Ashley, you're the last one. You have to deliver.
I got to wrong it up. Okay.
Wrong it up.
I think I've got a good start. My number 5 is a little game called Captain Crunch's Crunchling Adventure. I don't know if anyone has heard of this.
So you're delving into the games based on cereal.
That's where I'm starting.
Cereal storytelling. We love it.
I'm hitting the ground chewing, I guess. But Captain Crunch's Crunchling Adventure, absolutely awful game. It came in a box of Captain Crunch. Like, it was attached to the box. Right? And you basically have this little creature. Oh, I got to back up because this requires explanation for some reason. There was
Captain
a whole
Crunch
market.
Requires context. Okay.
It does. There was like a whole ad campaign around this time where for some reason they were saying that the stuff that makes Captain Crunch delicious is mined from underground by this like society of furry troll people.
What?
I don't know what they were going for. But then this like monster came and was going to steal all the crunchium, which is what they called it. The crunchium. So you had to come in and raise a little crunchling from infancy and train it to like throw rocks and skateboard and stuff.
What?
Yep. And then it would eventually grow up. Like, you'd feed it and you'd pet it so it was happy, and you'd train it, and eventually it would get strong enough to like beat the thief in like a skateboarding or climbing competition, and then you won all the crunchium. Yay. And every once in a while Captain Crunch would show up to say Captain Crunch cereal really loudly. Oh, and the only things you could feed it were like different kinds of Captain Crunch cereal, so you had to like pick like which kind you wanted to feed it. And I loved this game as a child. I played it over and over again. It's so bad, but I love it so much. I think from that description, you've probably figured out how bad
it is. That game
is
not good.
Nope.
I got an inkling of its quality.
Of its badness. It's wonderful. I rewatched it a little bit ago.
It's about as good for you as cereal is.
About as good for you as Captain Crunch. Number 4 is Poker Night at the Inventory 2. For those who have not heard of this is a Telltale game from before anyone knew who Telltale was. And they basically take all of these different characters from all of these different shows and games and stuff and have them all play poker together for some reason. And it has a lot of lagging issues, like to the point where it can almost be unplayable which is really unfortunate. But the game itself is pretty fun. I never won at poker, but it's just really fun to watch, like, Brock Samson and Claptrap and Ash from Evil Dead and Sam and Max, like, just banter back and forth. Like, the writing is A+. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, yeah, it's a Telltale game. The writing's really good. The gameplay, meh. But I had a lot of fun, even though I lost every single time. But, of course, they're all assholes when you lose. So I was like, it's eventually just like, okay, I'm turning this off. I'm too angry. I'm going to break my TV. Number three, I'm going to agree with Shadow of Mordor mm-hmm. as being, I think this one for me was particularly interesting because, I mean, I like Lord of the Rings, but I'm not like a huge Lord of the Rings fan. When I first heard about it, I'm like, because I've never played a Lord of the Rings game that I liked or I thought was good. And so it was like kind of blew it off originally. And then I offered to play it alongside the person who was reviewing it just to kind of be a second opinion. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, it's Assassin's Creed, but like with magic powers. I love it. So that was a lot of fun. I love the Nemesis system in particular. I'm like, this is A+ game making. Mm-hmm. That's when I started to think, yes, movie games, they can work. They can really work. And then Alien Isolation came out and it solidified it. Number two, I'm going to go with The Wolf Among Us. That's probably my favorite Telltale game. Mm-hmm. I think people disagree with me on that one. They're like, no, it's The Walking Dead.
It's totally not The Walking Dead.
I know, but everyone says it is. But anyway.
It's Cinemax Season 3. Everyone knows that.
But The Wolf Among Us is my favorite. I think probably because it helps that it was my first Telltale game. And again, I was like, what's all the ruckus about, guys? And I decided to play it. I'm like, oh my God, it's so good, and I have no idea why. So that one meant a lot to me personally, and it still has a place in my heart. It's like my favorite, and I also loved watching my friends play it and just like screw everything up. So funny. And my last one, I think this counts. I'm not sure. It could be my wrongest one yet.
The judges, they're preparing.
Yeah, we're ready.
You're ready.
We're gonna tell you that you are verboten.
Kingdom Hearts 1.
Yeah.
Because half of it belongs to Square, but half of it belongs to Disney. And Kingdom Hearts 1 in particular, they really emphasized the Disney. They were all in
true.
On Disney.
That is true.
Which is why I actually liked 1 better. Because they were all in on the Disney.
Yeah, all right, I'll allow it.
Yes. And I also love that one because it was just so simple. It was a boy and his friends go on an adventure to save a girl, and he has a nemesis, but eventually they learn that they're very similar and get along, and it's
just...
Well, nice music plays, and it's just, it's so cute, it's so fun, and I think they do something interesting.
The camera is terrible.
That is true. The camera makes me want to die. But the story is just really cute. I like that they do something interesting with all the Disney worlds. As opposed to 2, my biggest problem with 2 is they just kind of redid the movie again, but Sora is like cheering from the stands. The first one, so it has a lot more going for it just in terms of how it uses its worlds. And it's just so cute. It's just so fun. I love it. It's my favorite. I would go back to it even today, even though it's they're definitely superior games now, but I'm still just like, love it.
Well, that's wrong, but I mean, I think it took us on a journey, and I like the moment of uncertainty at the end, whether or not the game was going to be valid. Mm. But it was.
And it's good!
Right. I mean, I'm looking forward to Kingdom Hearts 3. I have no interest in the series, but from what I've seen of 3, it just looks fun. I just want to
As soon as they pulled out, like, there's going to be Tangled in it, and look, here's one of Sora's...
Wait, there's Big Hero 6 in there, man.
Big Hero 6.
Sold. I would not have watched Big Hero 6 if Ludwig had not just raved about it from literally the day it came out. That movie is so freaking good.
It so is. It really is. And I actually feel the same way. I think maybe this is why I'm saying Tangled, because I had the same experience with Tangled.
Because all
the promotion for it was awful.
Yeah.
Like, all the commercials made it look terrible.
I agree.
And they had a long history of
Same with,
like,
Frozen, I thought. I thought the Frozen commercials
were
horrible
awful.
As well.
They were awful.
Because they were all trying to appeal to the kids, so it had to be funny. And I'm like, this is going to be so bad. And then my friend, which I feel I need to preface this with this information, a 6-foot-tall Marine tells me, we need to go see Tangled. I went and saw it by myself, and it's really good. I'm like, dang, okay. So I went and saw it, and I'm like, oh, it's perfect. This movie is so good. So I think that that's probably why you and I are both happy about those individual ones, because it's like, what? Mm-hmm. This was really good.
Yeah, it's just that it's probably one of the best Marvel superhero movies.
That's right,
it
isn't
it? Property. So yeah, I'm glad that that's in there. That's good enough to lure me into your video game, is to have Baymax in it.
That is clever. That's probably the best way to incorporate Marvel into that game without everyone wanting to.
Baymax
just like
should come to Super Smash Brothers as well.
And the next PlayStation All Stars.
Oh, there
and
won't be a next PlayStation All Stars.
Oh, bless PlayStation All Stars' heart.
Aww.
It's so tried.
Okay, so here's the thing that I wanted to say. So last week we had a segment. We had an interview and a segment on Lara Croft Go.
Oh, man, I missed
and
the Lara
I'm
Croft
just
Go
about done.
Dang it.
I'm just about done with that game, and here's the thing. Here's the thing. Someone made one of the best Tomb Raider games in a very long time on a phone.
Aww.
What? Right? Yeah. It's and you know, like, you want to write it off. You want to be like, oh, that's not real Tomb Raider. But sure, okay, the action is not the same.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. I totally agree. The art style is not attempting to be realistic. That's also true. But everything in that game is broken down according to what made Tomb Raider unique. More so than I would say the Tomb Raider games.
Oh, I completely agree.
Fair enough.
It feels lonely. You're isolated. The music is sort of really, really subtle but evocative at the same time. And you're just solving puzzles and avoiding traps and working with the wildlife to so that they don't kill you and actually work for you. Really clever puzzle design.
The puzzle design is immensely clever, and it ramps up at exactly the right rate. So as soon as you figure out, like, for example, there will be snakes and spiders and things on the track, and you need to be able to shoot, you need to attack them either from the side or behind, because if they can see you, they're going to attack you.
They're going to get you.
But they'll, I mean, it just starts you off with, you know, one snake, and then, oh, well, here's one snake facing away that you can attack and one that isn't, so find out what happens. And it's just such a wonderful gradual, without there ever being a hit you over the head tutorial.
There's never even, I don't even think they show text
on
the screen.
Not at all. Nope, nothing. It is completely learned by playing, and they present you with new elements so gradually and organically that it never feels confusing, and it never feels overwhelming or too slow. Brilliantly designed.
Right, it's like, so there are, like, for instance, there are cracks in the floor.
Yep.
And just so you can visualize this, it's an isometric view. You see Lara from the top down, sort of, and there are little nodes on the floor, and she can move node to node. That's one turn. She moves one turn at a time, one step at a time. And you move around this sort of almost like a board game layout, but not quite, because it's drawn in such a way that it does look like a tomb, and there are forests around her and waterfalls and things like that. And if you cross over this cracked node, it starts crumbling when she stands on it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can move on from that. But if you move over it again, it'll collapse and she'll fall in and die. So now you know that's the rule, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now you start seeing that the game puts these things in and forces you to take a route that you may have to cross over some of these things more than once, unless you figure out the puzzle and don't do that.
Very Catherine.
So then they have enemies that follow you, and now you learn that the same rules apply to the enemies, so now you're trying to get enemies to fall into the traps behind you, things like that, as you try and solve the other puzzle. And they have all these little callbacks to things that are exciting in a Tomb Raider game, like being chased by a boulder,
mm-hmm.
or making out before a door closes, or solving a puzzle so that you can connect a piece of bridge and then cross over it so you can get to the next area. All that exciting stuff of bringing old machinery back to life. That's all in this game. It's all there.
Okay. So it's a Lara Croft game.
It is
well, no,
straight
it's a Tomb Raider
up.
Game.
It is.
That's the confusing part.
But it's a Lara Croft game.
Yes, it's called Lara Croft Go, but it's a Tomb Raider game.
And
does that make sense?
If you played Hitman Go,
yes,
I think this is superior to Hitman Go.
I would agree.
Because the movement is much. Hitman Go was set up to look and emulate a board game.
Literally
a board game. He, like Agent 47, mm-hmm. moves like a token on a board. The environments are very, very sparse, so it looks like just a board out kind of floating in space by itself. Whereas with Lara Croft Go, she's animated beautifully. She is a person as opposed to a token. And mm-hmm. it's in an environment. There are, you know, she's in the jungle and you'll see trees and ledges and you can see the rest of the tomb that she's, you know, currently exploring off in the distance. The movement is still the same. You can only move one tile at a time. And there are still levers and switches and platforms and stuff like that. But it just feels much more like a living, breathing world than Hitman Go did.
Yeah, and it's just so satisfying to solve these puzzles and have that clarity about what the rules are. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, there are also, for instance, spiders who move one step and they move back and forth in a single line. So every time you move, they sort of move around and they're like hazards you have to avoid. Because if you time it so that you intercept with them as you move through their line of sight, then you're dead.
Then they're going to be like,
wow, those are some bad spiders.
I mean, Tomb Raider has terrible spiders. It has a long history of terrible spiders.
That's true.
But yeah, it was refreshing, surprising. It was, and it's cool to see Tomb Raider so faithfully represented in a way that you think is going to be completely unfaithful, but is not. And I've just been playing it on my phone for a while, and it's really cool.
Is it for just iPhone or Android?
No, it's for everything. So this is the cool thing about a portable game being published by a large publisher like Square Enix, in that it came out on everything, Android. It's on iOS, so tablets and phones, and it's also on Windows 10, so it's on Windows tablets and your Windows desktop if you want.
Excellent. I'm so going to play this on my tablet.
It's only $5. It's $5.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I've been looking for stuff to play on my tablet just because, like, and I know we just recently did the best Android games, and we got a pretty good list out of that, but other than those, like, the market is just flooded. I'm mm-hmm. like, I don't know what to do with this, so that'll be cool. I've got something to play.
And if you're a fan of the original Tomb Raider, I think there are lots of nice little touches that you'll also enjoy, like a lot of the sound effects are straight from the first game. The main menu is the 3D circle, where Aww. You, like, spin items around.
Aw, cute.
Just like the menu in Tomb Raider 1. It's really cool.
I like it.
I also want to talk about a game that I saw at PAX that kind of really struck me as cool. And I play lots of cool games. Like, I played Hyper Light Drifter. That's like a Kickstarter game that's coming to PS4 down the line and PC. Mm-hmm. It's like a Zelda-ish kind of game
mm-hmm.
With a really distinct art style. You'll know it when you see it. The Hyper Light Drifter was in the game that we played yesterday, Ashley. Do you remember? On Wednesday.
That was Runbow.
Runbow, yeah. Mm-hmm. Susan, have you heard of Runbow?
I've heard of it, and I know absolutely nothing about it.
We streamed it. It's a Wii U game. How many people can play at once? Nine?
Nine people.
What?
You're in a race. You're running from left to right. Okay. And there are lots of different platforms, and all these platforms are different colors.
Okay.
And the background is a color. So let's say it's orange, mm-hmm. and you're heading towards a green platform, and you jump. And this is a race, so it's very frantic, very chaotic. Okay. It's this 2D racing game. And people are running, and they're jumping, and you jump for that green platform, but you see a little splash of color coming from behind in the background, and now the background is green. But because the platform is green and the background is green, your platform is green.
Oh, no!
So there are these continual waves of color sweeping across the screen.
So how does the color change?
It's just completely, it's on a timing.
Oh, wow.
Rhythm.
Okay, cool.
So it sweeps across the screen, and anything that is the same color as the background color disappears. So you have to be careful in how you judge your platforms.
And not just visually. It's not that you just can't see it anymore. It's
there
really
was, not there.
There was a platform there. There is no longer a platform. You fall through it and die.
Right. And so, like, there are lots of other hazards. There are power-ups, which are... I'm sure there is a really good strategy to them, but they really just kind of make the game feel even more frantic and chaotic and funny. Like, there's one that instantly swaps your position with someone else. There's one that suddenly flips the screen upside down.
Mm-hmm.
There's one that gives you boxing gloves that let you punch people out of the screen immediately. It feels like this constantly moving, funny racing game that has a lot of attitude, too. Like, when you
it
win,
does.
The character who won kind of has a really funny taunt to people. As well. I really like that. I think you should check it out. If you have a Wii U, you don't have a Wii U, do you?
I do.
Oh,
oh
yeah,
good.
I'm talking to the listener who, like, nodded his head.
But I definitely agree. I'm I was about to say I'm really excited for Runbow, but Runbow's already out, so hooray, it's happening.
You can see our stream if you go to youtube.com/gamesradar, or if you go to twitch.tv/gamesradar, it'll be archived there. It was a lot of fun. But I was going to talk about a PAX game, so what was that again? It was called Laser Life, yes.
Ah.
Laser Life. Laser Life is from a game. It's from the people who made Runner 2. The Bit Trip.
Oh, Bit Trip.
People.
Uh-huh.
They are now called Choice Provisions for some reason. And it is. So let me pitch it to you.
Oh boy.
You are an alien, and you fired these beams into space, and you have to guide the beams with your analog stick. So it's like it's a first person view. Think of it. And you're going forward into space like a tunnel. And you're guiding two solid laser beams, and they're kind of very fluid, and they move with your analog sticks left and right. And you try to guide them through little circles.
Is it kind of like entwined?
Sort of. But like they're very freeform. You fly them all over the screen as you move forward down this tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
But you try to get them to go through these circles. And they're usually two circles at once, so you have to sort of move your analog stick so that they're both going through at the same time, and then you pull the trigger. Mm-hmm. And that's the rhythm to the music. That's the rhythm game mechanic right there. It's very visually awesome. It is, the music is really good, so already they have the basis of a good visual rhythm game. But what you're doing with these beams is you are trying to find out what happened to a dead astronaut. The aliens at the beginning of the game discover this dead astronaut. You don't know what happened to him. You don't know what the status of the other humans are. There's just this dead astronaut. It's a skeleton in a spacesuit with a shattered helmet. And you are trying to recreate all of his memories to find out what happened to him. And as you assemble these things, you see the visuals coming up in the background and forming in 3D as you go down this tunnel, basically. And it might be a teddy bear. And it's a reminder of this astronaut's childhood. He had a favorite teddy bear. And that's basically the pitch. Like, you're trying to rebuild his memories. And this is basically a Tetsuya Mizuguchi game. It's like Rez or Child of Eden.
Very cool. You know I'm in for
that.
Okay.
Like, that is like, if you like those games, you will love this. You will love it.
I'm into that.
It's
like
on Steam. I think it's coming to PS4 as well. It'll be on Steam maybe in, I think it was like 2 months maybe. It's coming up.
I am loving all these indie games that are hitting the PS4. I'm really enjoying them.
Yeah, I think it's like a really cool way for them to be discovered and curated. But I feel like a lot of our listeners who are probably way into like stuff like Rez and Child of Eden.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I started playing this, I'm like, this is it. This is the one that someone made after Tetsuya Mizuguchi took a break.
Okay, I need that in my life.
I do love Child of Eden.
Yeah. And the logo is super cool.
I talk about
it's like one of the coolest logos I've ever seen.
That I've been playing that is amazing.
A video game
that nobody
on this
play?
Show? Yes, obviously.
Yes. We'll
we
allow
love that
it.
Stuff. We love it.
Okay, so here's the thing. First of all, it's a Vita game, which is problematic.
Ooh, I think I might know what you're talking about.
Secondly,
go on.
Okay.
It's called Lost Dimension, which is the most vague, you know, generic sounding title ever.
Right.
Brilliant game. Absolutely brilliant game.
Brilliant. Well, we're going to go with brilliant right
out of the gate. No, it's brilliant. If you are a fan of Danganronpa, like that tone, that kind of malicious mystery tone, you will dig on this game hardcore. It's so good. So here's the shtick of it. It is a tactical RPG in that, so you'll have missions, and each mission has a victory condition, which is usually just destroy all your enemies. Occasionally, it's destroy a specific enemy, but most of the time, it's just kill everything. And your characters, you have a party of six, it's you plus five others, each character can only move a certain distance, and then you get to perform one action, whether that's attacking, healing, using an item, whatever. But interestingly, if you're close enough to another one of your party members, you can give them your turn. Which adds a nice little layer to the tactics. It has friendly fire, so you can't just, you know, be carpet bombing the area with, you know, missiles or whatever, because you'll hit your teammates. But what's good about that is there's friendly fire for the bad guys, too. So if you can get them into a nice choke point, they end up shooting each other, which is...
Nice.
It adds some nice depth to the tactical part of it. So that's that part of the game, which is really well done and really, really fun. The story of the game is that there's a bad guy called The End, which again, terrible name, who says, I have a bunch of nukes. I'm going to blow up the world in 13 days. And he causes this pillar to appear out of nowhere. He says, I'm at the top of the pillar. You want to stop me? Come get me.
It's nice of him to give everyone a heads up.
It's a little strange. You're like, why is this happening? So
that's some hubris right there.
Not really.
Or not.
So you wake up and you're there with 10 other people. Your memories have mostly been erased. You're all wearing kind of the same uniform, so you figure you work together, maybe? You're all part of the special team that got sent in to stop this guy, but none of you knows each other.
Mm-hmm.
You all have a special supernatural power called a gift. Yours is that you're psychic. One girl can control fire and ice. Another girl can levitate. Another guy can teleport, stuff like that. But what's cool is every chapter, as you go up the tower, there's a traitor in your midst. And you all have to vote on who you think the traitor is, and then they're erased.
Oh, God.
Here's why that's cool. Because it forces you to change how you typically play a party-based RPG. Because normally with a party-based RPG, you basically have the folks that really work with your playstyle, and you use them all the time. Maybe you swap out like one rogue for another, but by and large, once you've got your party down, you've got your party down. And they're the ones you upgrade. Yeah. They're the ones you buy the really good armor for. They're the ones you buy all the really good weapons for. And everybody else is just kind of back at HQ, like eating Hot Pockets and watching TV. In this game, the traitors are randomized.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
So you don't know who you're going to lose along the way. So somebody you were maybe relying on the entire time, poof, they're gone, and you no longer have access to them.
Oh, jeez.
No.
Yes.
That'd be so frustrating.
I like that it's randomized. Yes. That reminds me of the Westwood Blade Runner game, where different people would be replicants at the start of the game, and you wouldn't know. And like that uncertainty is
super cool.
It's like it's so unsettling.
It lets you replay the game, which is really, really great. And it can't be spoiled for you.
That's also true.
The other thing that it forces you to go out with a different party. So at the end of each mission, because you are psychic, you'll be able to hear your party members' thoughts. In each chapter, 3 of your colleagues could possibly be the traitor. So at the end of each mission, you'll hear people's thoughts, and if you have to mix and match your party members to see how many people, like this time, when I went with this party, there were 2 potential traitors in it. But when I switched out these people and used this party, there was only 1 potential traitor. So let me try it with this lineup. Maybe I'll get all 3 potential traitors. It's like playing the game Mastermind. And so you go through all the missions and you shuffle around your party members until you nail down who the 3 traitors are, the 3 potential traitors. And then you play a little mini game for you to go into to use your psychic powers on them to see if they are, in fact, the traitor. And then you can go into the vote knowing exactly who to vote for.
Oh, clever.
It's
very interesting.
Super, super clever. It's a really great way to shake up the party-based system. It definitely adds to replayability, which is important because you find... Now, obviously, by the end of the game, some of the people are going to be gone. Over the course of the game, after each mission, you come back to the hub, which is where you can chat with all the other people, get to know them, do your equipment, blah, blah, blah. And if you chat with people enough, you form a bond with them. You will only get the true ending of the game when you form a bond with everybody.
Okay.
Will they really make you work for that?
So you're going to have to play it more than once.
Oh, God. Oh, dear. Well, that kind of got a Persona feel to it, it sounds
but
like.
But what's cool is when you play it through the second time, it's basically New Game Plus. You start, like, as you level up, you get gift points that you can put into your skill tree. It starts you off with 20 of them. So you start with, you can respec if you want, give yourself new paths, whatever.
Okay. This sounds like an interesting game. And it's for
Vita?
Poor thing.
I know. I know, that's what I'm trying to...
There are lots of cool games coming to Vita, including the sequel to Whoa Dave, which is called Space Dave.
Which sounds awesome. It's
really good.
And Severed. Don't forget Severed.
And Severed, yeah.
By the Guacamelee people.
Persona 4 Dancing All Night.
Why can't we have a more popular Vita?
I know.
Why? Why do people hate the Vita?
It's like, maybe is this going to be the flare-up? I don't know. It seems like there's some
sadly
interesting
no.
things happening.
No.
Aw.
I think it's very difficult to reverse course on that one.
Yeah.
Which is just
like
sad.
Even if they started giving it away with PS4s, which would have been a great idea because of remote play, frankly.
Oh, yeah,
but
you're
But even
right.
if they did that, you know what I think people would do? I think they would take it and then just trade in the Vita.
Yeah, probably.
Sad. But Grace doesn't feel like independent games, and they're really cool first party games.
Absolutely,
it still has one of the better Uncharted games.
It does actually, being the card game.
I feel like that was made by the Sony studio that happens to be somewhere in my hometown. Like, I found out there's a Sony studio where I grew up, but no one knows where it is.
You can find it.
I will seek it out.
I think that about wraps it up for this show. I am thinking next week is going to be a little different because we're not going to do How Wrong Is Your List next week because we need some room in the show to cover all of the major games that are coming out. And we'll be talking about their reviews and their feedback and the follow-ups on that. Games like Mad Max, games like Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain, games like Forza Motorsport 6. It's getting pretty hectic in here.
Yeah.
It's that fall.
Time of year.
It's that time
really
of year.
Is.
It is beginning. And it's just going to get worse.
Backlog, man.
Did you see the opening cinematic for Halo 5? That was really cool.
I did not yet, but
just
I will.
Go check it out.
I'll go watch it right after this.
Yeah. So come back next week and we'll talk about sort of our journey through these hot new games.
And sob internally about our backlogs.
Seriously.
It's just going to be more Witcher 3.
Bye, Snake Eater.
All right, thanks everyone. Thanks for listening. Thank you, fellow hosts, for bringing your lists.
Yeah.
Even though it was terribly wrong.
Even though it was terribly wrong.
The wronger, the better.
Goodbye.
Bye.